Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome to Full of Hot
and Cold
Air. On today's episode, we're talking innovation with a lifelong friend, John Vanderveen. Here we go.
Host of Full of Hot and Cold Air. As Brendan said, I'm joined by him, co-host and a dear friend of ours, John Vanderveen, who is going to talk innovation with us. So welcome, John.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for joining us. So we're gonna talk all about what innovation is, how it's useful, but I think let's maybe get your bio, give us a quick background. How did you come to be sitting in this podcast studio right now?
Yeah, sure, no problem. Well, I think part of that is knowing you and Brendan for about 15 or more years, but
yeah,
as far as my background, so I started with a management degree, and I've always been kind of artistic and into design, and I realized pretty quickly that design was more the life for me. So I went back to school and studied industrial design.
Can you explain what industrial design is?
Don't worry, I have it queued up because no one ever knows. So. So yeah, industrial design is essentially designing products that are manufactured in mass. So a computer, a cell phone, a table,
an air conditioner.
A wheelbarrow.
Air conditioner, wheelbarrow, yeah. That kind of stuff is all industrial design. So that's different than craft design, which is kind of more people in their workshops doing that sort of thing on a smaller scale. There's many different facets of industrial design. There's soft good design, doing bags and things like that. There's hard goods, which can be, you know, a printer, a mouse, an air diffuser, like I see in the room here, a telephone, a TV, anything like that. There's automotive and transportation design. So yeah, basically the revolution of industrial design started in the 50s, actually a little bit before, but it gained popularity then. Things used to be just designed by engineers. they would make the most functional thing, and people started realizing that they wanted something that they could, have an emotional connection with. So that's kind of where industrial design came from. How can you use things like psychology, human factors, usability to actually make things better, make people respond to them more. So that's kind of the basis of industrial design.
So making like everyday goods, we'll say, quote unquote, sexier.
Sure. Yeah. That's definitely a way, like slicker, sexier, just
more efficient,
more engaging. I mean, if you think about a lot of the objects that you have, you probably have iPhones, right? So that's like, how much do you care about that iPhone?
That's in my hand pretty much every minute of
every
day.
You care about it a lot, right?
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't want a Nokia phone, like a little brick phone or something, or a flip phone.
I get the urge to play Snake every now and then.
That Nokia phone
I think you can do that on the iPhone.
Yeah, I think my iPhone might be capable of it.
So yeah, it's about building in those kind of experiences and those kind of considerations to really let people connect with things and let people do more with their things and put more value on them.
So for example, if you had a wall-mounted ductless unit, you don't want it to just look like some box that was taken out of Soviet Russia. You want it to be something that you're proud to display on the wall, or at the very least, something that you're not going to notice, something that you're able to look past.
Yeah, exactly. And a great example of industrial design and user experience design, which I'll talk about in a minute, is the Nest thermostat. I mean, that was a huge thing in this industry that really took off. It's an example that we use for Internet of Things constantly, which is kind of the next evolution of these design considerations, pairing physical and digital things and using sensors and data and things like that. So yeah, I did industrial design. I worked in the field for about three and a half years doing that. And then I moved to user experience design. And so user experience design, I'll get into that as well, is kind of how digital interfaces work and how they kind of interact with people. So the same things I was saying about industrial design apply to user experience design, except we're talking in digital at this point. So I've done a lot of different design things, and And I kind of wanted to take a step back and think about the bigger picture. So I went to, right now I'm currently enrolled in a kind of a Master's of Innovation program.
Okay. Feel free to humble brag about yourself. Where is that Master's of Innovation from?
It's Carnegie Mellon.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
I would wear that on my sleeve.
So yeah, I enrolled in at CMU at last summer for a 9-month pretty intensive program, taking about 16 classes in 9 months and just kind of learning what innovation is through the classroom as well as through my own self-reflection and reading and things like that, and also taking the opportunity to kind of learn about some cross-functional disciplines like engineering and business and taking classes in those to really understand the entire process and how, you know, teams work together to create new things, create interesting things, and even just better versions of things that exist.
So it seems like the innovation degree, it's kind of taking this like lofty sort of esoteric, we'll say, concept and making it applicable to real life jobs as opposed to just being like, hey, I got a degree in philosophy, but how the hell do I use it?
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely a way to look at it. And I think part of what I have done over the last almost year is really try to understand what innovation is, because it is kind of one of those esoteric words. Like you said, it's like, you know, is it an invention? Is it a flash in the pan moment of aha, or is it something more systematic? And what I've really focused on is kind of defining it and realizing how to do it systematically. So looking at trends, looking at social factors, economic factors, technological factors, seeing what's out in the universities right now, because they're usually about 5, 10, 15 years ahead of industry. And, you know, what are people creating? What are they discovering? How is it applicable to everything? And just kind of thinking pretty deeply about that.
So did you come to find that you were maybe more innovative than you thought you were coming in the design? I guess, is design just kind of a small sliver of innovation maybe?
So, no. If I believe... So I guess I would say that what I've kind of taken away from it is they're almost interchangeable. Okay. In a way. So design, you know, what does design mean? What do you guys, let me ask you.
Creating something new.
I think of it as basically the aesthetics of something. Like, how does something look visually, like all the features, the functionality of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think those are definitely components of it. And, you know, what I've realized through some of this thinking is that design is definitely creating something. I don't know if it means creating something new. I think it means creating something on purpose with purpose, and that's kind of the definition that I use. I distinguish that from kind of discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
Not that discovery can't be a part of innovation and design, but if you find something that's kind of naturally made, something that maybe, you know, in the lab you mixed things accidentally and created right. this solution, right? That's not designed. I believe design is doing something on purpose with purpose. So it fulfills some need for people and you're doing it thoughtfully.
Sure.
So discovery is more of just a stroke of good luck, we'll say, maybe mixed with a little bit of design. Like you stumble across something and you're like, oh, wow, this will really work. But it wasn't the intent that I was pursuing.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. And I guess when I'm talking about design, I include engineers as designers in my big, broad definition, which is kind of going against some of the things I said about understanding engineers and designers. I mean, you can get into the nuance, you know, 100 million different ways. But I believe design is creating something, you know, on purpose, with purpose. And actually what I think innovation, well, what do you guys think innovation is?
I think of it as almost like we'll call it like the little brother of invention. It's taking something that exists already and how do I make this better? It's not creating a new concept exactly. It's how do I build a better mousetrap?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty close. I would say that is basically one type of innovation. And you can... again, slice and dice them quite differently. There's kind of core innovation or incremental where you're just, you know, making a better mousetrap. There's adjacent innovation where you are kind of understanding some of your users or some of your core skills, but you're pushing it a little bit outside of your comfort zone And then there's disruptive innovation, which is kind of a trendy buzzword right now, but that's like really creating something new and something someone's never seen before. So I think those are all innovation, but one definition I've seen that I like is kind of, Brendan, what you said about design. Mm-hmm. It's just creating something new. So innovation is really about creating something new, and whether that's, Mary Beth, how you're saying, of finding what's out there and integrating it and making a new thing, or whether it's that kind of invention, that disruptive innovation, that's all innovation. So there's different levels of things that really matter when you're talking about innovation. And you know, what I found to really treasure about it and about the process is kind of alignment and buy-in. You know, I think you can have all the ideas in the world, but if you don't have a process, a framework, and especially if you're in a corporation or a company and the top level leadership doesn't buy in, you're not going to innovate.
I think I've worked in a lot of industries as well where the reverse of that is true, where top level management says, okay, this is what we're doing, but then there's not buy-in from everybody else. So I think I would agree with that. Having buy-in from all parties that are stakeholders, we'll say, is imperative, because mm-hmm. otherwise you have people that are going two different directions and you kind of get stuck where you are.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So how, let's switch gears and make this maybe a little bit more focused. Innovation in terms of a business setting, how would you incorporate that? How is that valuable to, like, say, a contractor who has a shop with maybe 10 employees? Or how is it, put it in layman's terms, how is it something that everybody can use, as opposed to sort of being like this lofty thing mm-hmm. that, you know, only really cool techie, you know, Silicon Valley type companies use? How is this applicable to everybody?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, starting with the higher up level, like Fortune 100 companies, mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact statistic, but if you look at who's been on the Fortune 100, the Fortune 50, even 500 for the last 100 years, there's only a couple people that consistently stay there. So I think what I'm trying to get at is there's kind of a cyclical nature of everything. You know, if you're not really keeping an eye on what's next, what's happening, you're going to get left behind. And there's companies, you know, I think like P&G or some of those big ones that have done a really good job about staying innovative and keeping that mindset. And they've been able to buck the trend and actually stay on those lists for quite a long time. So I think, you know, you can kind of use that as a model and bring it to any size business where, you know, you don't have to necessarily spend half your budget on it or anything like that. But if you're looking at what's next, what's the industry doing, what are people doing, you know, how are their needs changing, you're gonna stay innovative. And as long as you can communicate that with your company and encourage kind of wild ideas and develop them and give a little budget to that, I mean, I think you're gonna be in a lot better place than your competitors.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's kind of what brought you to us and spun our idea kind of, you know, something that hearing your definition of companies being innovative, it, you know, I think it made you think of us, because that's something that we pride ourselves on doing a lot day to day. And, mm-hmm. you know, as we talked and prepped for our workshop, it, you know, I think you might have said at one point, like, well, you guys are already pretty innovative, and we had never defined it like that. Mm-hmm. We never really thought of it in those terms. Yeah. So
I think I always go back to that quote from your grandfather who, for those of you tuning in, who founded the company back in the 80s, what was his famous quote? Don't tell me this is the way we're doing it.
Because we've always done it this way.
Basically, yeah, don't get stuck in that rut of, oh, well, that's just how things are. It's constantly looking for new ways to improve. So I think in the spirit of him, he would be very excited about this mm-hmm. innovation workshop that we did this past weekend.
Yeah, and so to that point, John, why don't probably better off for you to define it. But so you brought us an opportunity to participate in an innovation workshop mm-hmm. for Comfort Supply, and why don't you define what that was and what it looked like a little bit?
Sure, yeah. Before I get into that, I just want to touch on the kind of reasoning, you know, of approaching you guys.
Sure.
And yes, it's true. You guys, I've noticed that you and your dad and Mary Beth and everyone care about design and trying to stay on trend. But, you know, I want to mention again part of what I was saying before about alignment and buy-in. You know, I've always known you and your dad being kind of president, vice president, to really support these kind of new things. So I knew you, you would be an easy first client.
Easy sell. Yeah.
So you guys kind of already had that mindset.
Right.
You know, I think if I were to approach a business that was a little more stuck in their ways or not thinking about this stuff, maybe the workshop harder never would have happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, harder sell for sure. So yeah.
And do you think, I guess let's take that on a tangent before we get to defining the workshop. Do you think that's still a fight or a hang up of a lot of companies to think, to break that mold and be willing to think forward and out of the box and stuff?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've seen it in conversations with Fortune 100 company employees where they, you know, this is a major company. The person I talked to was in, and they have a, you know, an innovation department. They've invested millions in it. They've kind of created these business ideas and gotten really close, and they've never actually created a business because though they have C-suite buy-in for it, they don't have CEO buy-in.
Gotcha.
So that's one kind of extreme example, but you know, I think it really depends a lot on where you are as a company. One thing that I think is cool about CSI is you guys are doing well and you're still open to new innovations, new ideas. I think a lot of times people might turn to these type of solutions if they're struggling.
Right.
You know,
right.
We're at our last ditch. What do we do? Mm-hmm. Let's give this a chance. So I think that's probably uncommon to be more open to it, but maybe that's why you've been successful too. So that could be a part of it as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
For sure.
We try. Tell us about the workshop.
Yeah, tell us how the workshop went and maybe a little insight from your perspective as a facilitator. And then we're going to be joined a little later by a couple attendees from said workshop.
So. Cool, yeah. Yeah, so I, along with a couple peers, Isabel Mills-Tannenbaum and Anna Lahn, formed this group from our cohort called Correlate Innovation Consulting. And kind of as we've been hinting at, you guys were our first client. And the engagement kind of started, you know, with us speaking with you, trying to understand what the company does, what your challenges are, your opportunities, you know, specifically and broadly. And, you know, then we went about trying to get as many responses as possible from the actual workers. And we did that anonymously through a survey. And the reason for that is just kind of to foster openness and honesty. Sometimes you can get some insights when people feel secure.
Right. Right. And that was, I enjoyed that you guys kind of kept me at a very extended arm's reach from the project just to kind of create as much true engagement and authentic participation as we could, because I think it can easily come across as feeling forced or, you know, we're demanding this of you, you know?
So some of the questions, just to provide reference here, some of the questions on that survey were like, if you own the company, what would be something you would implement? What's a process the Comfort Supply can do better? I think there was one about like what values drive your everyday decisions? Things of that nature.
Yeah, so we wanted to first discern what the mission is, how well people know it, what the values are, but also get deeper into how do they see their job affecting those goals? Do they feel bought in? You know, what can you improve is a pretty obvious question, but you can get to some pretty key insights that way. So, you know, through that, we actually found we were excited to see that people know the values well, they know the mission well, they feel like they're making a difference. And, you know, there were some opportunities, nothing crazy bad or anything like that, but it really helped us kind of focus our attention and decide what to show you, what to walk you through on the day of the workshop. So another component to kind of our discovery work was to do a tour of CSI. So we came here a couple weeks before, I think.
Yeah, I think it was about
the workshop.
Yeah, a week and a half.
Week and a half before, just to see the layout, see how things process in a real, actual, physical way. You know, there's a lot of issues that you can kind of uncover from actually seeing people talking to them, seeing the space. We were looking for, I mean, if I can just candidly tell you, like,
please,
was there a mismatch of how Brendan thinks it's going and how it's really going? Thankfully, I think it's pretty accurate how you feel, but you know, I think there can be a situation where the vice president of a company says, I have an open door policy. And then you get there and the office is maybe, you know, through a labyrinth of hallways.
Hidden, right?
And,
yeah, exactly, exactly.
Or intimidating in another way. So that's part of what we were looking for. We wanted to talk to some folks, see what they thought of working here, what their challenges were, what their strengths were. And I think it was really encouraging to come here and see just the caliber of people that are working for you. I think we all kind of walked away and said, wow, you know, these people have, they could probably work wherever they want. You know, they could get a different job if they want. It's not like this is their last choice or anything. Not that we assumed it would be, but we were just really impressed with the people that worked here and thought, you know, they're doing something right if they can retain people like that for years.
Yeah. I thought, one of your comments to me after the fact was, yeah, that so many of the people at the workshop could be bosses somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was, and that's kind of fits to the mantra and the mentality my dad have of, our leadership style, I guess, and that kind of anti-micromanaging and letting the individuals mm-hmm. be their own decision makers. So I thought it was interesting that you could kind of see that even in a 4-hour, 3-hour workshop, mm-hmm. you know, the quality of people we've got here.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We were all really impressed. The workshop itself, we hosted a 4-hour workshop at our kind of institute space at CMU. We had about 10 folks from CSI. So that's like what, a third of the company
yeah,
or so?
Yeah. Yep.
A third of the company come down, and you know what we did was start with some kind of design thinking rules, like deferring judgment and encouraging wild ideas, building on one another's ideas. So those are pretty core.
Clarifying ambiguity,
exactly. So, you know, and having a tolerance for it as well.
Sure.
So part of design thinking is, you know, you start by really diverging and getting as many ideas out there as possible. And we went through some examples of how you can do that. What can a brick mean? What can you learn from this company that had a wild idea and found some success through a series of building up upon that idea? So that's kind of how we started with like a primer activity where the folks broke out into groups and designed a bag for one of their users. And the user was sitting among them. We just assigned someone a user. And, you know, what does the design process look like? What kind of questions do you ask? What do you get from those questions? How do you let that determine what features you have? And then in the end, I think everyone was pretty surprised with how different everyone's result was, which is part of what we were trying to
and
get
And is
at.
That is that usually when that, and maybe, I guess that was your first facilitation of the project, but I guess when that project or that stage of the process is worked through, is that usually the result that you kind of come to see that there's many ways to solve a problem? Is that kind of the reason for that project?
Yeah. So Anna has experience doing facilitation. She worked at the Dolly Museum down in Florida. And she's done some of these exercises before. And that is, you know, that's pretty consistently what you find. You really kind of highlight that different experience, different need of different users and make sure to keep those users in mind.
So one thing I thought that was really cool about that exercise, so what John's talking about here is we were broken up into three groups, and like he said, you had to design a bag, but you had to figure out what the person needed in a bag. So I thought it was cool because if you had just told me, okay, design a bag, I would have thought, okay, this is what I want it to look like visually. I'm going to design a bag and just see who wants to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the point of that exercise was to talk to somebody and figure out, okay, what do I need in a bag?
Mm-hmm.
I think one person said they were looking for a gym bag that had, you know, room to store their shoes, but was also waterproof. I needed one as a new mom that I could put baby supplies in, plus my laptop, stuff like that. So it's
right.
Really thinking of it with the end user in mind, as opposed to thinking, okay, this is the creation that I want to make. How is my user going to fit that mold? It was more, how is my design going to fit the mold of what the user needs? So it was cool to think of it in that terms, because I think so many times when we create something, we create what we want to create. And
yeah.
There's not as much purpose or intent behind
right.
it.
Yeah. So that kind of gets at, what we call user-centered design, and it's designing for the user. And that's what I think set industrial design apart when it became a discipline was, you know, there's that famous quote from Henry Ford of, you can have the Model T in any color you want as long as it's black.
Mm-hmm.
So it used to be after the Industrial Revolution, we're going to make this, you're going to buy it.
Yeah.
And then people started realizing, hey, we have a choice. Like it, the Industrial Revolution actually enabled factories to make many different things and, you know, make it quickly. So putting users at the center is really a core tenet of design thinking.
And I think to then take it to, let's say, a small business sense or our application, I think to understand that every customer is different and their needs, be it, you know, an HVAC system or a part or even just the way they need handled in a situation at the counter or on the phone, was really what I took from it and mm-hmm. applied, you know, to kind of my day-to-day thinking.
Yeah, and that reminds me of something that Mary Beth and I talked about during the workshop of, you know, she made a comment because she was the user, like she said, I feel weird like helping design this because I'm the user. And I said, that's actually part of what we want you to get out of it. You know, using your contractors, your customers to tell you what they need. You know, listen to them. Listen. They're your best resource.
Absolutely.
So somebody calls in and says, okay, here's, you know, the system's broken. Here's what I'm looking for. You're listening to them instead of just telling them, okay, this is what you need. It's really addressing all of the entire problem as opposed to just, you know, quickly giving them a solution and mm-hmm. brushing your hands and being done with it.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on with the workshop. So we had that first exercise with the bag, and then you can – what else did we do?
Yeah, I'll try to be brief because it was a 4-hour workshop. I don't think anyone's going to listen to it. It flew by,
I tell you that. I mean, yeah. it really, you know, and we can kind of get to the second half and maybe we'll spin into it with this. We broke for lunch, and before we knew it, we were kind of recapping and submitting our final thoughts for the mm-hmm. day. It was, like I said, I was coming from a unique perspective, having known you for so long and being so close to you. I was kind of caught in between proud friend moment and participating in the workshop a little. Sure. So, but again, the second half was really kind of taking those lessons and then trying to apply them really to some current challenges that came from those surveys.
Yeah. So we did a little more about specific, you know, techniques and things like that. But yeah, the core of it was really, here's some problems we think, or some opportunities we think that CSI might have. And we phrase them as, how might we do this? How might we do that? And then we opened it up and said, you know, what do you guys think? What are some opportunities that you have? And we got a lot of good stuff. And I think we actually went with one of yours. Yeah. Which I think is, you know, in many ways ideal because that might be something you're more passionate about. We were more trying to get the ball rolling with what we provided. So we looked at those, kind of voted on that and used a technique that we use in design, dot voting, where you get a couple votes and you go put a little sticker on the board and, you know, see what people are pretty enticed about. And another interesting or kind of important part about that is that, you know, Brendan's dad and Brendan get the same amount of votes as someone who's been there 6 months or whatnot. You know, I think that's pretty important because maybe, you know, if you give Brendan's dad 5 votes, then not only is that going to sway it, but it's also going to, maybe people are going to see his votes and just pile on to what he's done. So really kind of making it equal is the best approach. And I think everyone understood that pretty quickly.
So I think we can talk about like the concept that we went with was centered around communication. And I feel like we can talk about it. It's not like you know, it's not a trade secret or anything that is too confidential. And I think everybody on the planet can do a better job of communicating. That's something that across the board, I think everybody needs help with. So our concept was, how might we communicate better? And it was focused both internally and externally. How can we communicate better mm-hmm. among ourselves, between departments, with our customers, with our vendors? And that was the idea that we took and we ran with.
Yeah, so that was a pretty fun one because I think there's some obvious, well, not obvious, but there's some realistic ways to accomplish that. And there's some ways to prototype that. And some, you know, it's broad enough, but also specific enough to be in that kind of sweet spot, which is something that we focused on. We got the how might we statement, which was how might we streamline communication to remove gaps and redundancies. And we pushed that through some steps. And the first was kind of user research. So if this was like only an external facing thing, our next discussion might just been about customers and contractors. But since it was, like you said, multifaceted, both internal and external, we were able to ask, tell us about a time when communication worked really well, when it didn't work well, you know, what made this a how might we question? Why was it important to you? And, you know, what we were trying to do there is kind of simulate user research, because it's a workshop and we don't have time to go, you know, talk to your customers and things like that. But, you know, by putting that perspective around it, telling the stories, getting some richness to it, it really puts you in the mindset of the customer, of the user, which is a good starting place, which is where you should start with any kind of design exercise.
I really like, I want to take a step back and just talk about that how might we statement, because for me, that was my biggest takeaway from the workshop, was framing things in such a way that you're asking, how might we solve this problem? Mm-hmm. I think if you look at a problem and you say, if you just say, okay, we need to communicate better, that's so vague and it's such a lofty goal. It's kind of like, I don't know. I don't even know where we start. But if you look at it as how might we do this, it's a little bit more incremental. It's more manageable. And then it puts you in that mindset of, okay, there is a solution to this. We just need to find it, as opposed to like putting it out there that this is what we need to do, but I don't really know how to get us there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really powerful way to do it. And I don't know if it was IDEO, which is a design thinking firm, that created the how might we, but I know they rely heavily on it. And it's just such a magical way to approach something that it's had repeated success. And yeah, what you're getting at is totally true. It's like, it gives you that feeling of, you know, doability, or you can accomplish it. And it's also important to kind of get that phrase that way, so you're not saying, let's improve communication, because it's
negative. There's a negative connotation.
Well, and you can easily start saying bye, and you start getting into solutions.
Pigeonholing yourself off the bat.
So you start getting really into solutions, pigeonholing yourself.
And I think that kind of brings me to one of my takeaways, was even as, you know, back to kind of how might we needs to be general, you know, broad enough, but specific, you know, kind of that right wheelhouse of general and specific. And I think it was interesting with, you know, even within streamlining communication, there was still kind of that, you know, I think some of the groups took it an internal way, and one of the groups took it, you know, an external way. So there was still that different approach to it based on, like you said, the user research and having those conversations at the individual tables and stuff. So, and to Mary Beth's point, it helps just the whole concept in approaching problems that way helps break it down into much more manageable pieces, I guess you could say. I mean, our IT guy was like, that was his biggest takeaway too. He was like, dude, just being able to not have to take this huge overwhelming problem and try and fix it, you know, like peel off a little piece of it with a how might we and work on that and fine tune that. And then you're only left with less of it. So
I like, and this is small, but I think the we makes all the difference too, because it's inclusive.
Yeah.
You're not coming to a meeting and saying, here's the problem, how are you going to fix it? It's how are we going to fix it? And that just small, it's a two-letter word, but it makes all the difference in terms of buy-in and inclusivity and looking at a problem in terms of, you know, everybody has something that they contribute to solve this problem, rather than, okay, John, this is your problem, how are you going to fix it? Right. So that was like huge for me.
Yeah. And I think kind of phrasing it this way, how might we, it obviously fosters collaboration, but it also just the way it's phrased lets you ideate quickly, and kind of come up with a lot of ways to find solutions. Whereas, like you said, if you say this, fix this problem, you're just going to jump to your solution, and that might not be the most informed thing. And, you know, and this kind of leads into something I talked a lot about, was failing fast. So if you go and you diverge and you think of 15, 20, 100 different ideas, you're going to easily be able to start kind of, you know, clearly seeing what is the right idea, or what's the right group of ideas. What are the ones you want to test? How can you test it? Let's try this without investing a lot of time in it. I think there's a very like human tendency to want to keep your ideas to yourself, want to build them up until they're perfect. You know, you see this a lot in designers where they don't want to show anyone anything yet because it's not done and they're going to judge it too soon. And, but you know, the right approach, in my opinion, is show someone your first idea, your first concept, get them, get feedback. If it's bad, move on.
Yeah.
You know,
We did 2-3 test episodes of this, I think, before we launched the first one.
We did, and so, I think Brendan was like, well, should we go back and re-record it? And I was like, no.
I mean, and that's, you know, when you said failing fast and you started talking about that in the workshop, it, you know, I, one of my comments to Sarah Mary Beth after the facts is, you know, we're doing that all the time, you know, I mean, and that's something that whether we realized it or not, again, we kind of put a lot of these things, I think, into play on a day-to-day basis that we just never defined or really thought
through. We never labeled before.
Yeah, and so it's kind of interesting and I guess maybe reassuring to me, not that we've been doing it the right way or doing the right things, you know, but we feel that way a lot.
Sometimes
you know?
It feels like we just, I mean, prior to this workshop, I think a lot of times, like when you, me, and Sarah, you know, would collaborate on something marketing-wise, it kind of felt like, what's the saying, like throwing shit at the wall. But it's nice to know that even if you are throwing shit at
there's
the wall,
there's a name for that.
There's a name for it, and it's ideation. That was it. That was your big ideation, aka throwing crap at the wall, seeing what sticks.
Yeah, exactly.
Way to demean Veen's last 9 months of work.
So you're getting a degree in throwing shit against the wall.
Everyone's so proud.
Yeah, hey. So let's, I want to break this down then for people that might be listening to this, because I don't want to just talk about ourselves and how this was useful for us. I want it to be a sort of a lesson in anybody that's listening. Okay, innovation, how can I use this? Mm-hmm. So let's say we have a contractor that's listening and maybe sales aren't going so well, and the idea is, okay, well, we've got to get sales up. So if that's the mindset you're going into, turn that into a how might we, that's both, you know, broad enough and narrow enough that it's manageable.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think how might we's require a little bit of more thought sometimes, but we can take a shot at it. Okay. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say this is the end-all, be-all. But I think it was...
Don't sue John is what he's saying.
So the question is, if they were wanting to make more sales as a contractor that kind of installs HVAC systems, right? So yeah, I think...
I guess maybe instead of... let's not maybe force a how might we, but maybe just, you know, how... What's a... From an innovation perspective, how would a contractor maybe approach that problem? I guess from a more...
Yeah. Okay. We could do it that way. That works too. I think first step is to look at what they've been doing well and what they've been doing poorly. I think, you know, identifying maybe good sales, good, bad sales, and really to the extent that they can, getting feedback. You know, if they missed out on a sale, follow up. Why? You know, why did you go with someone else? You might find out they had a better price. You might find out, you know, I tried to call you 3 times and went straight to voicemail and you never called me back. So I think, you know, kind of that user research is really important. But again, you might find, I keep selling, you know, to this, I don't know, I guess, who their end user is. Is it homeowners?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We'll stick with the residential contractor. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, say, wow, you know, I'm really doing well in this neighborhood and I want to understand why. So, you know, you can ask the homeowner and they might say your customer service was phenomenal and you explained everything and I found your prices to be fair. And I told my best friends and neighbors family members. So, you know, you can gain a lot of insights from that sort of exercise.
So asking questions to begin with.
Asking
soliciting
questions,
feedback.
Yeah. You know, using CSI.
Yeah.
Say, hey, you know, I haven't been selling this unit. Has it been doing well otherwise? And what are people doing? So I think really understanding that stuff, asking for external opinions, you know, how do I present myself? Do I seem professional? What's my presence? Do I have a website? How do people find me? Just really digging, like it's all about asking questions.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. It almost sounds simple and not like, I mean, it's just something... I mean, these aren't like brain surgery ideas, you know? I mean, it's not that it's stuff that the contractor should already be doing on a daily basis, but certainly it doesn't cost a ton of time or money to ask themselves or their customers or suppliers these simple questions and really learn a ton about their own business, right?
So maybe like an easy way to do that would be like, you know, a survey. And if you complete the survey, get, I don't know, $50 off or something like that, enticing people to actually give you feedback. Because one of the things we had talked about in the workshop was if you look at Amazon reviews, everybody's either a 5 or a 1. Mm-hmm. You're going to get feedback if it's someone that had an outstanding experience and they're going to tell all of their friends and their family about you. And you're going to get feedback if it was an absolutely terrible experience mm-hmm. as well. So you need to get opinions from everybody in the middle. And a lot of times you have to seek out those users as opposed to waiting for them to come to you. So maybe sending out a survey or putting something on Facebook. Hey, would you mind giving us your mm-hmm. opinion? Something like that.
Yeah, and I think that's totally true. And one other thing I would say is, you know, we might have a tendency to label someone as a difficult person. You know, that person was a jerk. Like, they didn't want to buy from me. And maybe they were a jerk, you know. Maybe there are jerks out there.
There's jerks.
We can be real about that.
I can be a jerk.
But the tendency... I'm not
gonna. No. You guys have known me too. Just long. You're not allowed to answer.
Let it ride.
So you know, I think there's a tendency to kind of not want to dig deeper into those unpleasant situations, sure. but that's sure. a good opportunity.
I think that's your best opportunity. Sure. To get the. I mean, that's another thing we talked about on Saturday was brutal feedback. Mm-hmm. I think that's a prime opportunity to get that brutal, honest feedback, and that's your best chance to change. And granted, they might be a true jerk and it might be like, you know, it might be unreasonable negative feedback or just because they are that way, but it could be something that, you know, you do have an opportunity to fix or change.
Yeah. The bottom line is if it's a bad experience, someone is not going to be shy about telling you that and telling you true. This is what you could do better.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big component. I think also doing research, you know, if there's industry publications, trade shows, kind of finding out what's the new exciting thing. If you go to a customer and you can say, hey, you know, so-and-so manufacturer just came out with this and we offer that, maybe that's an exciting opportunity for them. Looking at other industries, totally different industries, like what can you learn from McDonald's? I don't know, maybe it's their fast service, their consistency. What can you learn from Uber? Oh, the sharing economy. How could I use that? And maybe it's not applicable, but start pushing yourselves to kind of think in that sort of way.
Think outside
outside
the box.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, what can you learn from people's behaviors? What can you learn from society and, you know, climate change? I don't know. Like, start thinking about things that affect your business. Is it a booming economy? Now might be the time to go try and sell more. You know, is it a downturn? Maybe you're trying to find out who has the cheapest units. So just really kind of keeping an eye on the bigger picture.
So in keeping with our example here, let's say contractor X goes out and he sends out all these surveys and he's coming back on a 1 to 5 scale. He's coming back at a 3. He's doing okay. And mm-hmm. so maybe the focus is, okay, how do we close more of these deals? Like we're sending out quotes all the time, but we're not actually closing them. Would that be a good basis for a how might we statement?
Yeah. Like how might we convert customers that are on the borderline? Maybe that's too specific, but that could be like the start of something.
Okay. So how might we close more deals?
How might we focus on what we're doing well and push and change that into more customers?
Okay. So might we focus on our strengths and...
Yeah.
So as opposed to maybe looking at it from, we'll say like the managerial perspective of, oh my God, quotes are down. How are you going to convert these? It's mm-hmm. it's turning it into that we statement. What small steps can we take to increase our closing ratio?
Yeah. It's certainly more powerful to include yourself from a managerial perspective and, you know, maybe step away from the numbers instead of, go out, close this quota of deals. You say, you know, how might we push ourselves to get more customers? How might we go into a different industry or, you know, I don't want to say industry, but kind of a subset of customers.
Or a different segment of the market or, mm-hmm. or like you said, apply a different industry to the way I'm doing things.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have our how might we statement. What's our next step? If I'm the contractor and I'm like, okay, how might I close more more deals.
Throw shit at the wall.
Throw shit. Okay, so that's our next step. We're going to start throwing stuff at the wall. So this is where we ideate and we walk us through that process.
So yeah, I mean, it's getting everyone together. And, you know, you really have to encourage the right approach and the right mindset. And it goes back to that encouraging wild ideas. And, you know, basically you don't say that's a dumb idea at this stage ever, because it can lead to something cool. So you get people to say whatever's on their mind. Maybe it sparks an interest. Maybe someone's different experience makes them think of something that's pretty applicable. So you just kind of, like I keep saying, diverge. Just get as much out there as possible. See how that could work, and then how those types of things might overlap and might be grouped. So that was kind of the next thing we did at our workshop, was group ideas and see how they work together, see how they're different. I know I sat with Brendan and his team during this part of the exercise. And, you know, at first it was like, oh yeah, that's the same idea as mine. And the guy whose idea it was said, well, actually, no, it's a little different. And then he explained it, because on the surface level, you might think it was the same, but it got down to some nuance that, you know, hadn't been thought of by the other participants. And it kind of builds that idea. You know, I think it was something around scheduling, and maybe the original idea had looked at overall company, but this was more about the individual and how do they communicate
right.
that. Yep. So, you know, I you can get a lot out of those conversations, explaining your ideas, grouping them together, seeing what things from a different group might actually be able to be grouped with that and make your concept stronger. So I think it's all about getting everything out there, putting it together, seeing what kind of features you want, what kind of things you want to test. And you can have as many, you know, ideas or groups of ideas as you think you can support, and kind of follow those threads, you know, one at a time, or, you know, simultaneously, depending on your needs and your capabilities.
So I want to interject real quick here. One thing that I think is valuable to know is, when you're coming to this ideation stage, I think it was really cool for us, that, you know, we had representation from pretty much every department within the company. And I had the opportunity to work with somebody who, I really don't work with on a daily basis. You know, I see him, we're friendly, but I can't say that I've ever really worked with him on anything. And it was cool because we worked really well on this project. And I think it'd be useful for anybody who's looking to use innovation to just be mindful to include people who maybe you wouldn't necessarily include in like a brainstorming session, mm-hmm. but it's to have that buy-in from everybody. And there's a lot of good ideas that can be found by interacting with people who maybe you really wouldn't interact with on a yeah. daily basis. So whether you're inviting the secretary in or mm-hmm. the driver, making sure that it's all hands on deck, because you never know where a good idea is going to come from.
Totally. And that's, you know, something at school that we focused a lot on. Our program has design, business, and engineer backgrounds, but also people from all over the world. We have people from China, Korea, Nepal, India, Ecuador, you know, people from all types of different industries that speak different languages and have had such different experiences. You know, the way someone does something in Egypt might spark an idea that we haven't thought of here. And I've seen that play out constantly. And you know, maybe that's a little beyond what a typical business in America has access to, but I think the bigger idea is kind of what you're saying, of getting people from different departments to really think together, you know, people that look different. It wasn't an accident that you guys were with people that aren't in your role in those teams.
Right.
It was designed that way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, kind of to your point, and that it can kind of come from, you know, it can really come from anywhere. And it, yeah, well, more often than not, I think probably surprise you mm-hmm. where the some of the better ideas are come, you know, or can come from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I think that's interesting spinning out of the workshop now, and again, the afternoon flew by so quickly mm-hmm. that the end got, you know, kind of abbreviated. We're now, you know, kind of putting some of the things into, you know, already kind of trying to put some of the things into place and seeing maybe, I guess, I don't know if I would say kind of reworking the process, not, and maybe it's not failing fast, but kind of going back and reworking and fine tuning as you kind of have to then, I guess, call it logistically put it into
yeah.
to play in the, in mm-hmm. the real business world, especially
right.
when you talk about, you know, when we talk about solving some communication problem, just kind of where we thought we might have been really close to that kind of, okay, here's that solution, and then getting back and reworking it and remolding it, we're still kind of going through the process, maybe not as well defined as we did in the workshop, because we did a really pretty good job, I thought, of kind of bringing some of those challenges to really the precipice of decent solutions. So, but now kind of that next step is almost like we're redoing the process with the application of the idea, I guess you could say. And is that common? Is that uncommon? Or I know this was your first workshop, so maybe maybe you don't quite know the answer.
Sure. Yeah. So I think you know, something you made me think of while you're explaining that is kind of prototyping ideas, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's something we didn't really get to kind of do the hands-on testing.
Yeah. So just to give a little context around that, I think you know, one of the things I shared in the workshop was maybe your solution is something to do with having TVs or screens everywhere throughout the space that allow people to communicate easily. Well, maybe you don't want to invest the thousands of dollars on those screens to see if it works. So you mock it up with whiteboards, you know, you use Post-it notes and things like that. So it's all about kind of like trying the ideas without fully
investing
in them. And, you know, if you're familiar with the Lean Startup book, mm-hmm. That has a really pertinent example where I think they were making a kind of a shopping list thing, customized shopping list application or something like that. And, you know, to invest the infrastructure to make this thing would have been probably millions to make it work for everyone. So what they did is kind of what can be known as Wizard of Oz, where someone's behind the curtain and they're actually like creating these lists by hand for their first like 50 customers just to test out the idea. Right. So it's all about how do we try to make this work? You know, fake it till you make it.
Right. Gotcha. And that's what we're doing. I mean, that's kind of what we, are putting into play more or less. So
our two takeaways so far: throw crap against the wall and then fake it until you make it.
Yeah.
Solid business advice.
I hope that's agreed and cost you a lot of money, John.
We should write a book.
What would you say, John? The I guess, do you think the biggest advantage to like a small HVAC contractor, or call it any HVAC contractor, really the biggest benefit takeaway that they could have from applying an innovation and design thinking approach to solving the problems of their, you know, their day-to-day business challenges?
You know, I think that I don't want to dance around the question, but I think that depends on their goals, because I think this is a very
it's not just it's not an answer for everything. It's not, there's not one answer.
Yeah. So, you know, if your goal is to increase profit, then use the system as we've kind of talked about to understand how. If your goal is to, you know, be the best rated contractor in the city by Google reviews, use the process to understand how to do that.
Right.
You know, I think it really depends on your needs and you know.
I'm going to just interject and say it kind of comes back to that buy-in that you began with. If there's really not the willingness to apply the process and be willing to encourage the employees, or even just if it's one or two guys, the other individual, to think outside the box and have wild ideas and not turn down a stupid idea, then it's really not going to work for them to solve their problems, right? Yeah. I mean, it's got to start with that commitment to this is how we want to approach the problems that we have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it the biggest benefit maybe is staying around.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe innovation in a way is still kind of a big picture thing. Maybe it doesn't apply as evenly across every industry, but it does apply.
Sure.
You know, it's if you want to gain a competitive advantage, use some of these techniques, try to understand your customers, try to understand yourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, buy into it, spend a little money knowing that you might lose it, but you might hit a home run,
right?
You know,
right?
If you invest in these little things, and I think I mentioned earlier, there's different kinds of innovations. There's kind of core and adjacent and disruptive, and you know, there's a lot of research or ideas around that about how to invest in those type of things. So really, incremental innovation, that's kind of operational efficiency or effectiveness or you know, excellence. So that's kind of doing what you're doing, but doing it better, mm-hmm. and trying to get some like nice little ideas around how you could do it better. Adjacent, you know, it's maybe you're kind of going into an industry that's really similar. You realize that you can use the people you've trained, because I don't know what the right connection to HVAC would be, but maybe there's a really similar industry that people have a lot of the same skills. So maybe you invest in that sort of thing. And then, you know, disruptive is like if you're an HVAC contractor and you decide to sell falafels out of your truck too. Like, you know, maybe right. that's not a great innovation. Right. So I'm not suggesting
I would fully support whoever wants to bring me falafels.
If there's any Comfort Supply contractors that want to side job their trucks as food trucks and bring us breakfast and lunch, we are more than willing to support
you'll
that.
Eat it, yeah.
We will support that.
But yeah, so, you know, maybe it's a crazy idea and you know, 9 times out of 10 or 99 out of 100, that disruptive innovation doesn't work. So you kind of plan accordingly and you spend 70% of your money and your time from your innovation portfolio in those core ones. Sure. You spend 20% of time and money on adjacent and then 10% of time and money on disruptive. And maybe, you know, that even that's kind of pushing it for most industries. But you also can see kind of an inverse relationship with how you're paid back. You know, if you come up with like the HVAC innovation and you're, you
we're
know,
doing it right now, aren't we?
That's right. And you're, you know, using, you know, I don't know, something
wind
crazy.
Wind power.
Yeah. Whatever it is, maybe you become the Google of HVAC, but you know, it's really rare that you hit that disruptive,
sure.
But you can kind of plan accordingly and,
right.
and focus your efforts in a logical and kind of, you know, risk
smaller
management
scale.
Type
right.
of way.
Right.
I think one of like maybe a really good real world example of this is we hear time and time again, and you know, I'm not trying to like push any particular brand here. We're trying to remain unbiased on our podcast, but we hear all the time from guys on the unitary side who have recently maybe tried ductless, and they said, you know, I've worked in HVAC for 40 years and now I'm trying ductless, and I didn't realize there's this whole untapped market out there. And it was once they were willing to look outside the box and look for other solutions to the same problem, they really saw their business boom, especially when they realized, okay, well, in a lot of older houses that might not have had AC or they didn't have ductwork, this is a really good solution. So, you know, not trying to push any product line here, but it's just being willing to explore other avenues and say, yeah, like I've been selling unitary forever and it's great and it, there's nothing wrong with it, but I also need to look at other revenue streams and this is mm-hmm.
yeah,
another way
absolutely.
To do it. So,
absolutely.
So yeah, hashtag go ductless.
Yeah, I think that's a really realistic way to kind of approach the core innovation. You know, you're already selling HVAC
like
things.
You said, find something else.
Find
within
something
you're
within
already
that.
Doing.
Yeah, you know, a new system or a new approach that is really just in your core competency set, but you know, might be a little different than what you've been doing.
And even for
example.
The even for contractors out there, I think that's, you know, can be applied to the products that you're carrying and even the way that you're approaching the way you do business. Take it, your marketing efforts and your advertising efforts or your in-home selling strategy or, you know, your in-home sales presentations, you know, all kinds of different things can be, I think, dissected and innovated. Kind of mm-hmm. like, again, taking that big problem and looking at different ways to piecemeal it and make each part a little bit more innovative.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I don't want to like downplay the importance of our contractors, but in a lot of ways it is kind of a commoditized industry. Like, you know, if I call a contractor and he doesn't call me back, like I can Google and find, you know, 15 other people right off the bat that are willing to do the same thing. So it's just finding a way to set yourself apart. What do I do better than everybody else? And how can I take that idea and run with it? How can I really play up my strengths to gain more market share, to close more deals or whatever the goal is? So
yeah,
we'll say kind of in conclusion, innovation is for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's kind of something we drove at during the workshop was, you know, it's really a process. It's a framework. It's something that is accessible to everyone. You know, I think at the end of the workshop, I said, you guys just did innovation. You guys just did design thinking.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not, I don't want to downplay design thinking because I think it's extremely important, as is innovation, but it's really a framework. It's like the scientific method, right? You have a hypothesis and
yep.
you test it. It's just another way to look at things like that. I think the distinction is that we as in designers or design thinkers are trying to consider the right things and ask the right people and put people at the center of it. So I think that's why it's so powerful. If you can kind of understand people, understand their needs and delight them, you know, you're going to win. And yeah. I think that's why design thinking and innovation is really, really powerful stuff.
Awesome. All right. Well,
that was awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. You, thank you for sharing an afternoon with us. I know you got to get to class at some point soon and good luck with the innovation degree or AKA the throwing crap against the wall degree.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Always a good time.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
All right. Well, welcome back. We just had John Vanderveen here who hosted our innovation workshop last weekend. And with Brendan and I, we have two different CSI team members who were at the workshop as well. Welcome, guys. I'll let you guys each introduce yourselves.
I'm Crystal Shirk. I work in the commercial department. I'm the commercial project manager.
I'm Zach. I'm commercial estimator.
Awesome. All right, so you guys were both in the
workshop. I'm still Brennan.
You're still Brennan, and I'm still Mary Beth. So you guys were both in the innovation workshop last weekend. Let me ask you this to begin. Like, when you found out you were doing this, what were you kind of like, wait, what? An innovation workshop? What were your preconceived notions, we'll say, going into it?
Can I rephrase the question slightly? Because to further establish the point from earlier, though, it was completely voluntary. So I guess maybe the better way to phrase it is, why did you choose to participate in the innovation workshop?
I mean, I had no idea what this was going to be. I guess I was just more curious, like, you know, because there really was no, hey, this is what we're going to be doing here.
Right.
And I don't know, I guess I was just curious about
curiosity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, same thing. But given it was an innovation workshop and it being a CMU thing, I figured it would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I didn't really get a choice, I guess. I mean, John's a good friend of mine as well as yours. We were going to be in no matter what. But I think even had I not known John, I would have been attracted to it as well. Because for the reason you said, if it's CMU, obviously, they're not going to put together something terrible. But yeah, I went into it kind of like, I don't even really understand what the word innovate means. So what?
Yeah. And what are you going to do with that?
Yeah. And apply it and even furthermore apply it to, you know, this is an employer providing this. How am I going to apply to commercial estimating or project managing, right?
Yeah. So you guys are both in, I don't want to call it like a, I don't want to say a dry position, but it's a very regimented job. Like, I mean, it's kind of, I want to just go ahead and go out on a limb here and say it's probably more or less the same thing day in, day out. It's managing projects. It's working on these commercial jobs that we do. So did you have this notion going into the workshop that I don't really know how innovation is going to be applicable to me, or did you have any fear of that?
No, I mean, like I said, I had no idea. So I wasn't really thinking about necessarily my specific job going in. I mean, I can definitely, after that day, there's things that we did there that can be applied to what we do on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. But
What about you? Were you like, I don't know?
No, I mean, I wasn't worried about how it applies to my job, but more so maybe improving on the processes we implement day-to-day. I was thinking more broad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that sort of answers my next question, was what were your biggest takeaways from it? Like, have you found yourself thinking any differently, like from an innovative perspective? Have you thought about anything that he talked about, or?
I think it definitely makes you stop and actually think about things, because we did a lot of thinking. Like, left there and I felt like my brain hurt, but for good reasons.
Yeah.
But I think here and in like what I do specifically, just kind of stopping, thinking about what you're doing, solutions. You know,
so just taking it out of autopilot and maybe trying to find a different way to solve a problem that you deal with every day.
Yeah. And even hearing other people, because there are, I mean, just within the commercial team, a handful of us. And if one has an idea and it's just, no, that's not going to work. Now it's actually, okay, well, wait, let's think about this. How maybe we can build on it and think of other ways to get this to work.
Yeah, and then what I'd liked right off the get was the brick example.
Yeah.
And going from the basic ideas to breaking it down or using the materials and
different ways. Or it being something made of something entirely not foam or something like that. And yeah, I know that that was a cool exercise just to kind of even simplistic enough, but to get kind of thinking in that. Flowing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I agree.
Cool. I mean, I'm going to throw you under the bus here. Brendan this week was, there was like a communication gap somewhere with someone, and I could tell he was starting to get annoyed. And I said to him, I was like, well, one of the things we learned in our workshop was leave no room for ambiguity. So could you have maybe asked some clarifying questions? And I think he took it to heart and was like, yeah, you know what? I probably could have. I assumed that this person meant this. He assumed that he was telling me that. And there was a big lapse in the middle. So even Brendan took something away from it.
Yeah. Yeah, I took a lot away from it.
Don't discount you. So do you think it's something, do you think innovation is useful for everybody? Is it something that contractors and engineers can use? Or do you think it was kind of like, oh, this is a cool opportunity, but I don't know that I'm going to be able to use it in real life?
I mean, I think just from working here and outside, I think it was, you could apply it to really anything. I mean, specifically to Comfort Supply. I mean, not necessarily my job in particular, but I think as a whole, like as owners, as in a sale position, in any position, somebody can apply something from that workshop. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it makes you stop and think whether it's something within the company that, you know, like a miscommunication thing, or if you're just like at a store, and different ways you can apply it just to your everyday life.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a skill set that you learn that you can use throughout your day-to-day life.
Like a thought process.
Yeah.
Like a marriage.
Mm-hmm. That you could apply to
anything. A relationship, you know, like.
Yeah. Reframing.
Wait, what are we fighting about? Why?
There's some ambiguity here.
And that's, that was John's big takeaway, was that it is a process, you know, to your point, Zach, a process. There's steps to the way you work through the problem. And I think, you know, that was a big takeaway for me. What do you guys think, I guess, and as the vice president of the company, remove that, to defer the judgment of my position, and just what do you guys think the potential of applying something like this to, you know, a company like Comfort Supply is? Do you think there is the ability to kind of do what we did on Saturday on a regular basis at Comfort Supply?
Yeah. And a lot of the ideas people came up with were pretty cool. I liked yours, the lunch with the boss, a couple other small ideas. But I mean, it's in terms of getting together and kind of going through the same things. Yeah. Maybe small groups, you know, quick sessions, maybe quick half hour.
Like
sit here in the fish tank, maybe like an hour.
Here's something we're hung up on. Let's think about it.
It's been bugging us for, you know, a year or two or something like that. It's
I said one of the things that I thought was cool, and I even brought up this example, was Zach, you and I on a day-to-day basis, you know, we might pass each other in the hallway, but I can't say that I've ever had to work on anything with you. And I said it was cool that we were in the same group, because you build ideas off of people that you wouldn't necessarily collaborate with on a daily basis.
Yeah, and they fostered the communication, so everyone fed off one another.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I thought that was really cool, and I think it'd be good to implement moving forward. Mm-hmm. So if the commercial team is, like you said, has a problem they've been hung up on, you know, for a year or so, pull someone in who isn't on the commercial team, someone who can give an outside perspective and say, okay, well, you're looking at it this way, but have you ever considered this instead? Yeah. Or it's just good to kind of come at it from all angles,
especially when you're kind of doing the same thing every day, so you get into your ways, and if, you know, someone else has some input and a different way to look at it, that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, it's a perspective shift for sure.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any final thoughts, closing opinions on the workshop?
I mean, I feel like every company should go through it almost, because it's a little eye-opening. It gets people talking. And yeah, I thought it was really good. Like I said, there on Saturday, I said to you, I was like, I kind of came into this thinking, oh, are we going to hear a lecture all day? Is this going to drag? And I mean, it was fun, you know, every you interacted with everyone. We had activities.
We didn't get to the Play-Doh, but yeah.
But there was a purpose for it all. And then you're like, oh, yeah, wow.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Full of Hot and Cold Air. Do you have a question, or would you like to be featured on a future episode? Get in touch with us. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at FOHA Pod. You can also email us at fohapod@csipgh.com. Remember, that's fohapod. Until next time.